This podcast is offered by Jikoji Zen Center on the web at jikoji.org. Our programs are made possible by donations from people like you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning to you folks online. So we're going to have a sesshin starting this afternoon at 4 o'clock. People are going to be gathering for our Tanjue sesshin. Marking Buddha's birthday, some 2,500 years ago. And I'm always torn because, you know, I spend a lot of time thinking about the week, and then I got all this stuff floating around in here, right? And I go, oh, Sunday. Where do I start with all this stuff on Sunday? So, just for a little bit, let's just start right here where we are right now. Just start. That's where it all starts anyway. Just turning in, just checking in with ourselves. Just noticing what's going on in the body. What are your intentions? Do you have any expectations? Some of you new here right now may be feeling some kind of strangeness. Just notice what kind of things are going on for you. And then throughout my jabbering, okay, my lip flapping and stuff, notice what comes up. Keep one ear in and one ear out. Notice what arises in response to what you hear. Okay, see what's going on there. So, I decided for Tanjue to start with this quote from the Buddha. Through many births, I have wandered on and on, searching for, but never finding, the builder of this house. To be born again and again is suffering. House builder, you are seen. You will not build a house again. All the rafters are broken, the ridge poles destroyed, the mind gone to the unconstructed has reached the end of craving. So keep that word craving in mind. I also want to touch on a few things too that are just, in one is it's really this is a thread that runs throughout Buddhism, starting in Pali Canon, starting with the Buddha, going clear through on to us, right? Because this is the reasoning, the logic, if you will. If you have to have a reason and a logic, this is that for Buddhism, okay? This existing that exists. This arising that arises. This not existing that no longer exists. This ceasing that ceases. So that's the law of existence, right? Right? So this is the spirit, if you will, of this practice, how it becomes embodied in us, this kind of awareness, this kind of aliveness. All right? This existing that exists. This arising that arises. This not existing that no longer exists. This ceasing that ceases. It's the middle way. The middle way. Dependent arising. Dependent arising. It's the heart of the middle way. When we say everything is impermanent, now we understand why everything is impermanent. The Buddha also said, By and large, Kachana, the world relies on the duality of it is and it is not. But one who sees the arising of the world as it happens with complete understanding has no sense of it is not about the world. And one who sees the ceasing of the world as it happens with complete understanding has no sense of it is about the world. So, by and large, this world relies on the duality of it is and it is not. But one who sees the arising of the world as it happens with complete understanding, this existing that exists, this arising that arises, has no sense of it is not about the world. And one who sees the ceasing of the world as it happens with complete understanding, this not existing, this no longer exists, this ceasing that ceases, has no sense of it is about the world. So in our practice, this is, you know, we talk about consciousness, awareness, you know, this is what we get intimate with, this arising, that arising, this ceasing, that ceasing. We get really intimate with that. And that is knowing. That is knowing. And we get intimate with that in ourselves, right? So the Buddha also said, and this is, I get a little dark humor in here, is that okay? This is how you should train Bahia. And this story, it's an interesting story, a tragic story. I don't make fun of tragedy. But Bahia was a seasoned practitioner, you know, but not with the Buddha. And he was wanting to know, he approached the Buddha and he says, you know, life is short. Tell me, what is practice? What's the secret of practice? And the Buddha says, not now, Bahia, I'm busy. I got, you know, I'm going out on my food begging rounds, my alms rounds. And Bahia was persistent, please tell me what it's all about. The Buddha said, no, I'm busy, you know. The third question, and this third question, this third request, this became a thing here in Buddhism, you know. One more time. And so the Buddha said, okay, this is how you should train, Bahia. In what is seen, let there be just the seen. In what is heard, let there be just the heard. In what is sensed, let there be just the sensed. In what is cognized, let there be just the cognized. Then, Bahia, you will not be in that. When you are not in that, there is no you there. When there is no you there, then you are neither here, nor there, nor in between. This, just this, is the end of suffering. So, you know, one way we can, you know, back up a little bit, the it is and the is not business, the duality of that, right, is the whole thing in Buddha, you know, in the early teaching about self. And it became to be no self, not self. And Stephen Batchelor, who wrote the book After Buddhism, points out that that's a misconception. So the misconception being that, you know, there's just nothing here. And that has its ramifications on perspective and how it shapes practice and what it does to curiosity. Curiosity is an important element in this practice. So I've heard in my time, oh, it's all empty. You get this dismissive thing, oh, it's all empty. And so there goes the curiosity with it. Don't have to look anymore. And that's important. That's important. We have to be careful with that. The Buddha was asked, is there a self? And he wouldn't answer. So we get a, is there a self? Is there not a self? Is it is or is it is not? So we could say one who sees the clear sees clearly the dynamics of selfing. You know, seeing clearly the dynamics of selfing and not self. Because when you look at, I talked earlier this morning with the folks in the intro to meditation class, you know, about our conditioned states. So our practice is to, you know, our practice is we become really alive and intimate with our conditioned patterns of arising. That, you know, that's there in the 12 links of dependent origination that the Buddha taught, and you know, especially in the second link, the habit patterns, the volitions. And in Yogacara, when we talk about the Laya Vijnana, the storehouse consciousness, it's about what's in the unconscious. That's how we've been wired, our conditioned patterns, and that's vast. It's different for each one of us. We have some commonalities, but it's particular to each one of us. And so we begin to be familiar with that. And the storylines that go into that, right? So, you know, I'm gonna switch to Dogen, who am I? Because he just does it so well. He starts out the Ginjo Koan by saying, all things are Buddha Dharma. As all things are Buddha Dharma, there is delusion, realization, practice, birth, and life and death, Buddhas and sentient beings. So going back to that dependent arising, those four lines of dependent arising, this arising, that arises, etc. So everything is at play, right? When we think about causes and conditions coming here, it couldn't be any different than what it is right now. You know, we look at the world around us and we see, and it comes up and it says, oh, why is it this? Why is this happening? Why is this happening? And, most important, why is it happening to me? Right? But when you think about it, you just, so this, you know, that by and large, the world relies on this duality of it is and it is not. It is an invitation in. An invitation in. And what are we invited into? Well, to see into the it is-ing and the it is not-ing. As it happens, to be alive to it, right? And the more we do that, the more alive we get to it, you know, and there's so much happening. So Dogen says, you know, to study the Buddha way is to study the self. So that's an aspect, a key aspect of practice, is the study of self. But when we also think about, you know, the dependent arising, and we tend to focus just on this, right? This skin bag. But when we think about the conditioned patterns and stuff, just reflect on this. Did you make it happen? Did it start with you? No. And it starts at least when we're in the womb with what's happening with our mother. how it develops, you know, what happens with the brain development and the autonomic nervous system development. And after we're born, right, the continuum of the attachment patterns, how we're related to the family environment, the culture we grow up in, the schools we attended, the schools we were able to attend, not to attend, life experiences, different for each one of us. We think about those and how it shapes our narratives. It shapes our narratives about us, about me. Am I worthy? The narrative, am I worthy? Well, some of us would say, no. And some of us would say, you're damn right I'm worthy. I'm damn entitled to it. See the difference? And we, and you know, so it's that patterning, seeing that patterning, right? And we, you know, and we talk about our activation patterns, you know, and it goes back to our autonomic nervous system, the fight, flight, or freeze dynamic. That's very primal in us. It's very basic in us. We can't escape it. It's always on. And how that's been shaped, and how that, you know, that initial response to experience, how that shapes that. We get to be familiar with that. And then we think about, oh, you know, we begin to see our storylines, our narratives that get wound in there about that. That's the you-ing. That's the Y-O-U-Y-N-G. Right? And then, then we get to really back into the primal stuff, working with stuff like fear. You know, fear, anger, our patterns of fear and anger, which might be different for each one of us too. We get to be familiar with that. We turn into it. We feel it. This practice is, you know, I'm on a crusade here because it's not, you know, I don't always hear it in the Dharma. It's an embodied practice. When we talk about the mind, we're talking about not only the brain, we're talking about the autonomic nervous system extending throughout the body. As Bessel van der Kolk says in his famous book, The Body Keeps the Score. And, you know, and it tells us a lot. And practice for me has now become very physical, very primal in a way, very physical. But we, so turning into fear, and you could, the dynamics of fear, and thinking, you know, fear, fear. I don't want to be afraid. We're conditioned not to be afraid. We're conditioned not to be with our feelings. And that's tragic because they tell us so much. And being with them, turning into them, is the Dharma gate of liberation. And so the more we practice. And then, you know, slowly but surely, there's a rewiring going on. The selfing membrane is thinning out. The you-ing begins to settle down. So Dogen says, to study the Buddha way is to study the self. To study the self is to forget the self. Now, we're big-brained organisms, right? We may say, well, I'm just going to forget myself. It doesn't work that way. You can't think this stuff to happen. It doesn't work that way. You know, so you just begin to trust the practice. And, you know, mindful awareness, you know, mindful awareness. Dan Siegel, who wrote the book, The Developing Mind, confirms this. You know, so now we got science on our side. So we can believe it all. We can trust it now. But you begin to trust it, right? And what's happening is we bring awareness over and over and over and over. We bring awareness. Bringing awareness to actually alters neural pathways. It does. So we come up against this expect, you know, our conditioning say, well, it should, something should be happening now. Why isn't it happening? I've been doing this for 30 minutes. What's happening? It doesn't work that way. It works on its own pace, on our own practice. And so in this practice, we come up against ourselves, which when we really look into it, we didn't create. There is no you in there. When you look and examine, there is no you there. But there is this selfing that continues on, trying to build the house, this house is a sense of self that we create and we hold to and we cling to, sometimes literally. I have to have this kind of house, and this kind of house is to convey who I am, this house. So we've got to line up houses, right? And sometimes people have a lot of houses that they line up. But this house is what's been constructed. It's been constructed before we were, you know, the construction starts before we were born. So the seeing into, and gradually the house, you know, he's talking about tearing down the rafters and the ridge poles. That's the intention. We stay with it. And so then we, you know, and then we're coming up against something here, because the system doesn't like it when it's told it's not in charge. The system will resist. You will feel it in your sitting practice. Okay? You're sitting. And then some, you know, you start to feel something opening up, start to loosen. The heart opens up. And then all of a sudden the system closes back up. That's just automatic. It's just part of ourselves wants to stay in charge. It's not comfortable with that. It's opening up. Okay? But we continue our practice. We continue. The rewiring continues on. And at a certain point, it begins its own momentum. It does. It does. The being starts to orient naturally towards this. Once you experience, you know, if you're in activation, or if you're in fear, you know, and your system is closed down, what you notice is perspective gets really narrow and hard. You know, we get really narrow and hard. And then when it eases up just a little bit, you go, oh, we feel it. We feel the heart, something's moving in the heart, the heart's beginning to open up a little bit. We feel it. And then, you know, maybe, you know, we're really working with something that's, you know, really working with fear, and then it will really open up. And then we experience that. You know, where I come from in the middle of Illinois, we say, the proof is in the pudding. The proof is in the pudding. Okay? It's there. That's the knowing. And more the rewiring is happening. Okay. Now, just one more point. Okay? One more point. We think, again, I'm sitting on the cushion, I'm doing this. Now, let's go back to the setup. Did we make it happen? The brain, the autonomic nervous system, was shaped in relationship. Shaped by language, the people around us, our culture, it was all shaped by that, right? And the experiences the experiences have. So it's relational. And Siegel points out, and this is, I think when we start thinking about the self, what is the self? Where does it end? Where does it start? It's relational. You know, we need, in community, it's very important who we are with, who we expose ourselves to. Because in relationship, the relationship either reinforces or helps change the neural pathways. Very important to keep in mind. What do we expose ourselves to? When I say in relationship, you know, all forms of relationship, you know, electronic, whatever. For a lot of folks, their communities are online. Their tribes are online and stuff. There's not enough of this. Not enough being with people who have walked the road, and you can feel it in their presence, in their being. And that does something. Believe me, you. It does. You feel it. And the system feels it. It feels good. And it feels healthy. It feels healthy. So, you know, this process of taking the house down, you know, it's important to see how it was built. To understand all the components. And to be gentle with ourselves. Curiosity, that invitation in is an invitation, you know, for those, you know, the duality of it is and it is not. That statement is an invitation in. It's an invitation to be curious, to spend time. Thank you. Good timing. I was out of words. So we, folks online, and here, we're ready for questions. And if you could, I wear hearing aids. I got them tuned up for this particular occasion. But if you could speak a little louder, that would help me, please. And for the folks online, I'll try to repeat things and so they can hear. Yes? You have a question? You?
Oh, I do have a question, but in the process, while the housing is being taken down by practice, right? So there is still this immaturity, and even if you're aware, in day-to-day other actions, for example, fear, your primal reaction will still happen, like desire or lust. And when you're aware of those, and you know that I'm trying to take down the house, but at the same time, the house seems like it's still, keep building up one block by itself, then you are thinking about, okay, which one is faster? Is it building faster or demolishing faster? So how to deal with this, this process in the middle.
So the question is as you're taking down the house, our conditioned behaviors are rebuilding it. Good question. Yeah, that happens. Okay, and that's the patience. Okay, that's the patience. It's not like we're in lockstep and everything is going to happen in due order and due time. Okay, and so we look at that when we look at the rebuilding. As opportunity, it's a learning opportunity. So over time, we don't do it again. It gets less likely that we will do it again, right? And so coming back to patience. And then for a lot of us, that's an opportunity to work with our impatience. So yeah, be patient. It's going to look different for each of us, but yeah, that's a good pattern, good point. Thank you. Yes, Jennifer?
Hi there. Thank you so much for the talk. This is a rather personal question. I'm from Central Illinois as well, and I have yet to meet another Buddhist. So I'm curious where from Central Illinois, and if you still have a sangha there.
Ah, okay. Where are you in Central Illinois?
The Peoria area.
The Peoria area. Okay. There are some folks in the group I work with from Clinton, and we meet, you know, we meet all together. You see Edith on there right now. She's from Clinton. So if you can try to get you my contact information somehow, because we don't have an online presence, but let me see how we can figure, stay online, if you will, please. More questions. So you see how my group sort of exists. Just happens. Yes.
Thanks for the normal talk. I was wondering, in what direction should we change or not change towards?
In what direction should we change or not change what?
Towards?
Toward. Oh. Remember, right at this. So the question is, in what direction should we change toward or not toward? Is that right? Okay. So remember when I, at the beginning, I said, let's start here, right here now. That's the direction. Dogen in Fukan Zazengi says, learn the step backward that turns the light in. That's the step. That's always remember that. Right here, right now, that's where we orient ourselves toward. Toward what's arising. To whatever shows up. That's it. Okay? It's not very complicated. But that's it. And so we just remember that step. You know, the Satipatthana, the four foundations, is it four or five foundations? Five foundations of mindfulness. Four foundations, four, thank you. Four foundations of mindfulness. Sati is mindful, being mindful. It's also memory. So just remembering. I was saying to the folks earlier in the small zendo, you know, I work with a group of guys who are, you know, they're court-ordered domestic violence offenders. I don't expect them to take on a meditation practice. I'd be really surprised if they did, given the nature of their lives. But we talk about the pause. Talk about the pause. So remembering to pause. And our sitting practice really encourages that throughout the day, is to remember to check in, turn in. Whether there's activation, serious activation or not. You might be turning in when you're sitting around looking out across Chukotji land. We want to take in, we're programmed towards the negative. We want to start rewiring that. So we want to spend time with what feels good in a way, so we can reorient that conditioning. Yes.
Thank you for the talk. I have a question. So you said we want to tear down the house we built, but I imagine there will be a lot of pain associated with that, because a lot of things like the house, the other things you cherish the most, as we tear it down, you're trying to like be not attached to it, but then you have to say no to a lot of things that may used to bring you joy or give you a lot of pride or give you a lot of meanings, and that's kind of painful and hard to do in a lot of ways. And then the Buddha's way is all about erasing all the suffering. So how do one kind of differentiate, like, when is it too painful to like let go of things versus like knowing that letting go is for probably the higher goals of like no suffering?
So So the question is that we're tearing down the house. We're going to experience a lot of pain in that process, a lot of suffering, a lot of fear, a lot of, you know, the sense of letting go of a lot of what we cherish, right? Okay. That's kind of a conceptual answer, and I want to try to come down out of the conceptual. Okay. It's like a case by case thing, right? So as I'm not a carpenter, I'm not a home builder, but I do know some folks who use parts of old houses in their new house, right? And it may, and you know, some parts they're okay. We may say okay. But we're turning into, again, it's this turning into with what's coming up in our process, all right? And as we do that, you know, maybe something shifts, maybe not, right? We turn into the fear, and we're there. And then as we're with the fear, then we see where we come out on the other side. Then we go from there. Right, so I can't give you one answer. All right, so it's experiential as we go along. Right, and something we may see something differently as the perspective changes. It may shift on us, and we see it differently, and then we go from there. Right, and so thinking of it as what we're learning from it, and the wisdom that begins to unfold. Perspective can shape, you know, in this practice, can shift dramatically how we see ourselves, experience ourselves and others. And so we're exploring that. So I can't, you know, we can't give a roadmap here, so to speak, that they need to do this, it's experiential, you just stay with it, and see where you come out. Okay. People come to practice with me. I say, look out. You don't know where this is going to take you, and I think some people in this room would affirm that. Just don't know where it's going to take you. That's the beauty of it. I didn't know. 30 years ago, I had no idea where this was going to take me. I had no idea I'd be sitting here. I have no idea that at 75 years old, I would be feeling like a little boy. That's how perspective shifts. Yeah. Let's see if there are any more questions.
I just want to comment, share some of my thoughts on the previous question. So, when you have something like pleasurable or joyful, and the demolishing is not to demolishing that joyful and pleasure things. I mean, as long as that, for example, I'm aware of that I'm joyful, I'm aware of that I'm enjoying this. The joy and the pleasure can still be there. That's just my comments.
So the comment to the last question is the joy and the pleasure can still be there. Yeah, you're alive to the dynamics of joy and pleasure. You know, is it a key thing? Is there any notice in you? Okay, as you're tearing down the house. Okay, noticing being with the attachment and clinging, very fundamental. That's a key thing. That's the ridgepole. Attachment and clinging. Right? And the same thing to notice, very subtle, very noticed, but joyful pleasure, and then you can, you know, oh, is there any, you may feel some attachment there. And so that's something to work with too. It may seem very innocent, but it's an opportunity to investigate, right? And I've noticed is in my sitting practice is that it's you feel the attachment and the aversion. You just feel it. It just goes like this, and it goes like this. Once you this bringing awareness to it, it'll just go like this. Then it comes back. Then it comes back. Then it just goes like this. You feel it, the attachment and aversion. You get really intimate with it in your day-to-day life. That's in the chant we just did, the picking and choosing, the attachment and aversion, being with it, being very alive to it. You just like that. Just like that. Well, thank you all for being here today.
Thank you for listening to this podcast offered by Jokoji Zen Center. Our Dharma talks are offered free of charge, and this is made possible by the donations we receive. Your support helps us to continue to offer the Dharma. For more information about Jokoji, please visit us on the web at jokoji.org.